Vai,
vai,
jatu,
jatu,
sha,
sha,
iva,
iva,
sya,
sya,
paja,
paja,
adhyaksha,
adhyaksha,
madarhanam,
madarhanam,
bhavad,
bhavad,
vitteshu,
vitteshu,
atitaram,
atitaram,
mahi,
mahi,
sangrabrit. Sangrabhita,
Sangrabhita,
Atmanam,
Atmanam,
Navayajatu Mrishayavasya,
Navayajatu Mrishayavasya,
Vajadhyaksha Madarhanam,
Vajadhyaksha Madarhanam,
Bhavad Vitheshu Atitaram,
Bhavad Vitheshu Atitaram,
Mahi Sangrabhitatmanam,
Mahi Sangrabhitatmanam,
Vai jatu mrishayavasya,
Vai jatu mrishayavasya,
Prajadhyaksha madarhanam,
Prajadhyaksha madarhanam,
Bhavad vitheshu atitara,
Bhavad vitheshu atitara,
Mai sangrit vitatmana,
Mai sangrit vitatmana,
Na,
na,
not, Vai,
Vai,
indeed,
indeed,
jatu,
jatu,
ever,
ever.
Rasha,
Rasha,
useless,
useless.
Eva,
Eva,
only,
only.
Sya,
Sya,
it may be,
it may be.
Praja,
Praja,
of the living entities,
of the living entities.
Adhyaksha,
Adhyaksha,
O leader,
O leader.
Madarhanam,
Madarhanam,
worship of me,
worship of me.
Bhavat videshu,
Bhavat videshu,
unto persons like you,
unto persons like you.
Atitaram,
Atitaram,
entirely,
entirely,
Mayi,
Mayi,
on me,
on me.
Sangrabhita,
Sangrabhita,
are fixed,
are fixed.
Atmanam,
Atmanam,
of those whose minds,
of those whose minds.
The Lord continued,
the Lord,
my dear Rishi, O leader of the living entities, for those who serve me in devotion, by worshipping me, especially persons like you, who have given up everything unto me, there is never any question of frustration. Purport. Even if he has some desires, one engaged in the service of the Lord is never frustrated. Those engaged in his service are called Sakama and Akama. Those who approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead with desires for material enjoyment are called Sakama, and those devotees who have no material desires for sense gratification, but serve the Supreme Lord out of spontaneous love for Him, are called Akama.
Sakama.
Hello. Sakama devotees are divided into four classes: those in distress, those in need of money, the inquisitive, and the wise. Someone worships the Supreme Lord because of bodily or mental distress. Someone else worships the Supreme Lord because he is in need of money. Someone else worships the Lord out of inquisitiveness to know him as he is. And someone wants to know the Lord as a philosopher can know him, by the research work of his wisdom. There is no frustration for any of these four classes of men. Each is endowed with the desired result of his worship. Navai jatu mrishayava syat prajadyaksha madarnam bhavad vitheshu atitaram vai sangrivatatmanam. Mrisha means useless. In the estimation of the materialists, worshipping the Supreme Lord is useless. Simply, these people are wasting their time doing some prayers and rituals. And it's useless. It's simply sentiment. There's no actual result. It's simply their religious faith. But it doesn't mean anything. It's useless. This is their period. According to them, one has to work, and by your work you get the result of it. Everything is a result of your own endeavor. But they don't understand the actual background of activities. Sometimes a man is sick just a little bit, and the doctor is very good. He gives very good treatment, and the patient dies. And sometimes the disease is very severe, and there's no proper doctor, and the patient lives. It's not simply by our own endeavor. Sometimes, even on a very strong boat in the ocean, with a very good captain, the boat sinks and everyone dies. Sometimes a child has very attentive parents, and the child dies. And sometimes the child has no parents, no one to take care of him, and goes on very nicely. It's not simply by our work. If I simply work and get rich, everyone would be rich. There's so many men working, and they're not getting rich. And someone else, without working at all, he's getting money like anybody. Some people we see, no matter what they do, money chases them around. Money is always looking for them. And someone else, he's always looking for money, but money is running in the opposite direction. Why? It's as a result of our past activities. There's an unseen background of past pious or impious activities. For that matter, why is one person born in a rich family, someone else in a poor family? Someone's born very healthy, someone very sickly. Someone's born very beautiful, someone born very ugly. Someone's in a very educated family, someone else in an illiterate family. Why this background? They'll say everything is biology and chemistry and genetics. That's all right. Biology is there, genetics is there, chemistry is there. But why is one person born here, one person born there? That also they can't understand, even the question they can't understand, because they think that person and body are identical. So if you ask, why is one person born in one body, another in another, the question doesn't even compute for them, because for them the person is the bus. They don't understand the different. They don't understand the life force that animates the body. At the time of death, all the ingredients of the body are there, but we say the person is gone because consciousness leaves the body. As soon as consciousness is gone, the body is useless. They're not able to explain what consciousness is. They say consciousness comes from matter. But if you ask them, all right, how does it come from matter? What specific material elements get together in what specific way to produce consciousness? That they can't say. If you ask them, all right, I'll give you whatever matter you request, now you also create consciousness. That they can't do. Then what is their science? Science means theory, demonstration. So demonstrate. Even their theory is simply some broad strokes that consciousness comes from matter. But mobiles off, please. Consciousness comes from matter. But if you ask them how, they can't show. And if you ask for a demonstration, no demonstration. We'll do it in the future. We're on our way. Post-dated check. So this is the
beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Nasato vidyate pavo na pavo vidyate satana. Ubayorapi drishtontas tvayostat pradoshita.
There's one element which is eternal and another element which is temporary. The temporary element is matter. Temporary nature is matter. And the permanent is consciousness. The child's body, young man's body, old man's body is changing. Always changing. But consciousness remains constant. So consciousness is a fact. We say Atma or soul, whatever you like. But the consciousness within the body is a fact and it's traveling. Or even it's born in one body. But why this body, not that body? The process will be described later in this third canto. Devahuti and Kapil, Devahuti and Kardamuni will become the mother and father of Lord Kapildev. He'll explain these things in detail. But for now, every one of us sees one person is born in one circumstance, another circumstance. It's on account of past pious or impious activities. The ignorant person thinks, why pious activities, impious activities? Let us do whatever we think is we want to do, whatever we think is right. And they're only taking into account the immediate outcome. Even that they take into account imperfectly. They try for one outcome and they get another outcome. They try to make life more easy and they make it more complicated. They try to make it free from anxieties and they create more anxieties. They create a difficult civilization full of troubles and an artificial way of life. Apart from that, even if we think, no, they're making a very nice way of life, how long will that life last? I live in this body 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 80 years. Then, dehantara prapti, I have to go to the next body. And according to my activities in this life, I have to take my next body. That they don't think about. They're like children. The child, what does he want to do? What does the child want to do? What does he want to do? Study very hard? No. What does he want to do? That's you. But most children, what do they want to do?
Play?
Yes, they want to play. Thank you. You have it on authority. Children want to play. The child doesn't want to study very hard. The child doesn't think that I have to study very hard so that I can go to a good university and make good money and support my wife and children. He doesn't think like that. He thinks, let me play. Where's my Game Boy? Where's my soccer ball? He wants to play. Because he doesn't consider later what comes in the picture. The parents, therefore, have to oblige him, no, you have to go to school, you have to study very seriously. So the materialists are like children. Everything for play now. And they don't have any idea that after this body is finished, I have to take a new body on account of my past activities, or that means my activities in this life. That they don't consider. Or they dismiss that this is all sentiment, this is all religion, this is all, if you believe it, it's all right for you. I don't believe it. You believe or not believe, doesn't matter. It's not that things happen according to our belief. Just like suppose I believe, I won't die. Does it mean that I won't die? No, it's all right. If you believe in death, that's all right for you. But I don't believe in that. So for you it's a fact, but not for me.
Jatasyuhi dhruvam mrityu. Krishna says, for one who is born, death is certain. Not for some people, if you think it must happen. Laws of nature means that you believe or not believe. It will act. You believe or not believe that if you put your hand in the fire, it will burn. It will burn anyway. Jatasyuhi dhruvam mrityu, dhruvam janma mrityu. Similarly, it's a law of nature. For one who dies, birth is certain. You may accept or not accept, but fact is fact. If it's a fact, then it's a fact for everyone, not just those who believe it. So we have to consider, is this a fact or this is simply mythology or superstition? But from the arguments given by Lord Krishna and Bhagavad Gita, from the evidence given in Bhagavatam, we understand it's a fact. Otherwise, why different people, different results, different? Simply by chance? Chance isn't the reason for anything. Chance is a description. When you say that the coin came up heads by chance, it's not that there's something called chance that made it happen. It's a description that over 100 or 200 bosses have to be this way, have to be that way. That's a description. Just like if I say this wall is white. That's not a force that makes it something. It's a description. So chance describes what's there, but it's not a cause of anything. So we say, oh, one person is born in this family, another that, by chance. It doesn't mean anything. It means we don't know. It means we don't know. Why did this plane crash? Oh, by chance. No, there was some reason. You have to investigate, you have to find out, maybe the pilot was drunk, maybe some mechanical defect was there. But if you say by chance, that's an excuse, not an answer. So to say people are born in different circumstances by chance is meaningless. We take birth because of our past bias. Generally, in Indian civilization, everyone knows this, and therefore people are interested in pious activities. When the Kumbh Mela is there, so many millions of people will gather. Because they think, no, this is pious. I have to get Punya, let me go. They're concerned on pious activities. So, the materially speaking, religion is maintained and followed for some pious benefit. Either one is thinking that for my future life I'll get a higher situation, maybe I'll go to the heavenly planets, maybe I'll go to some heavenly place where there will be beautiful girls and I'll have so many, maybe something, but they're thinking that if I'm pious in this life, I'll get some better destination in the next life. Or they're thinking that if I perform pious activities in this life also I'll get something. They're thinking of some material benefit. And actually that's a fact. That by pious activities, someone is born rich, someone is born educated, someone is born beautiful. These things are there by pious activities. But simply pious activities and pious results don't solve our problems in life. Suppose I'm born rich, beautiful, educated, everything. Does it mean that I'll have no problems? Even the rich man, even the beautiful man has so many problems. Birth, death, disease, old age. Not that these are, even Indra, even Brahma, they have these problems. The real problem of life is how to get out of this material world and go back home. The there are different classes of persons. Some are full of material desires, and some have gotten beyond desires. They practically have nothing to desire. And some are full of desires for liberation. Akama, kama, moksha kama, sarvaka kama. Some are full of desires, some have no desires, some are desiring liberation. But if one is intelligent, whether he's desiring, not desiring, he should engage in devotional service. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udhavati tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham. Why? Simply someone is saying, you should do this. Why should I do this? If I have all material desires, why should I worship God? If I desire liberation, why should I worship God? If I have no desire, then why should I bother worshiping God? Yes. If I'm full of material desires, Krishna is the person who can fulfill all desires. Even suppose I'm worshiping the demigods. I'm worshipping Kalima, I'm worshipping Durga, I'm worshipping Ganesh, I'm worshipping Lord Shiva with some desire. I want a beautiful wife, I want prosperity, I want good health, I want education, I want something. For education, that we worship Saraswati, for health, the sun god, for a good wife, Uma, or Shiva, husband or wife, Lakshmi, money. But maya vavihitan hitan. Krishna says all of the benefits given by the other gods are given by me. I'm in the background. When someone worships some demigod, tasya tasya shalam shatam, maya vavidyatam. Krishna says, someone wants to worship such and such God, I'm in his heart, I make his faith steady, so that he can worship himself to that deity, worship that deity. And I'm also in the heart of the demigod, I direct that demigod, alright, this rascal's worshipping you, give him something. So, it's given by Krishna anyway. So, if I have to get something from Krishna, then why not worship Krishna? In business also, the philosophy is cut out the middleman. Go directly to the source. So the source of everything is Krishna. Why not go directly to Krishna? Krishna is the grantor of all benedictions. Krishna is the original source. When the demigods need benedictions, they go to Krishna. So why should we also not go to Krishna? And Krishna demands that. Sarvadharma, for example. Kamais taistir hitagyan. Prabhajyante abhideva. Those whose intelligence is elsewhere worship some other deity. So, sarva kama, if one is full of all desires, one should worship Krishna. And moksha kama, if one wants liberation, then Krishna is Mukunda. He is the giver of liberation. When Hiranyakashipu was worshipping Brahma, "Sir, I want to become immortal." And Brahma said, "I'm also not immortal. I have to ask for something else." So, for liberation, we have to depend on Krishna. And if one has no desires, actually everyone has desires. Only the devotees, Krishna Bhakta Nishkam. The devotee has no desires, and so naturally he's worshipping Krishna. Not to get something, but because he knows that I'm servant of Krishna. It's like water, rain. If I rain, I have to fall from the clouds. So if I'm a living entity, I have to serve Krishna. That's my business. If I'm a hand, I have to serve the body. If I'm a clock, I have to tick. So if I'm a living being, then I have to serve the Supreme Living Being. That's my duty. And beyond duty, those who are the most perfected souls, duty or no duty, I just love Krishna. The gopis are not thinking about their duty. Actually, it's against their duty. They have their duty to their family, they have some other duty. Duty, the hell of duty. We love Krishna, that's all. They're on the highest ladder. Good? Yes, it's my duty. Let me serve Krishna. Still more advanced? Duty or not duty? I'm serving Krishna. Out of love. There are so those who serve Krishna ultimately attain the highest destination beyond what can be attained by any other means. Vedeshu yogeshu tapasu chaiva daneshu yat punya palam prishna. Then, suppose I'm looking for something, Vedeshu, by studying the Vedas, or now they're not studying the Vedas, they're studying chemistry, biology, engineering, anyway, so many books of knowledge. So one gets something by books. Of course, these other books, but really by studying the Vedas. But anyway, any knowledge. They're getting something by studying books. Vedeshu and Yajneshu, by performing some sacrifice, we get something. Even materially speaking, people sacrifice, they make sacrifices and they get something. Yajneshu and Daneshu, by giving charity, one gets something. Of course, immediately, one gets his name and lights. Such and such person has given $10 million to start a hospital. But apart from that, we understand that one gets permanent benefit. Not permanent benefit, but lasting benefit. That by pious activities, dana, yajna, tapa, these are all pious activities. One is building up a credit of pious. And those who are going the other way, they're in debt by impious activities. So they're paving their way toward suffering. But Vedeshu, Yogeshu, Tapasu, austerity, Tapasu, Chaiva, Kaneshu, Yat punya palam pradishtam. Whatever pious benefit one might get by any of those activities, or all of those activities. Adyeti. One surpasses all that. Adyeti. Tat sarvam idam vididva. Yogi. A devotee of the Lord. Param sthanam. He attains the supreme destination. Yagatva Nani Vartante Tatama Paramashita. one goes back home, back to Godhead, which is the real business of life. So the worship of the Lord is never useless. Rather, everything else is useless. Akayur Indriya Rama Mohamparta Siddhi. Someone simply gratifying his senses, actually he's wasting his life. Sense gratification. Oh, I'm working very hard. You're wasting your time worshipping Krishna. I'm working very hard. I'm making money. I've got a car. I've got a house. I've got money. I've got a huge VCR. I've got home entertainment system. I've got I press a button and this happens. I press a button and that happens. I have so many things and you're just a beggar. Huh? But all of these things, what is this sense gratification? Finally, it comes to sense gratification. You have a big, huge establishment or a little modest establishment, it's for sense gratification. Man is going to a big, big restaurant that none of us can afford. And he's eating so many things that none of us would want to eat. So what is he getting? His sense gratification. The tongue is getting. He's meeting with some beautiful girl. What is he getting? Sense gratification. So that sense gratification, he's thinking, you've wasted your life and I'm getting all of this. But the mosquito is also getting that. The mosquito is landing on your arm and drinking some blood. And he's getting sense gratification. The dog is eating. The dog is sleeping. The dog is having sex. The dog has a big defense department. So, you're so advanced, you're so sophisticated, you're so accomplished, you've got so much advancement. But what are you? You're a dog. You're a dog, sir. Just you're an advanced dog. United Dogs of America. You can push everyone around, you can send your missiles, you can send your army, but you're a dog. You can bark louder, all right. You're a big dog. You've got the biggest teeth. All right, you're a big dog. But you're a dog, that's all. Huh? There's no difference between your sense gratification and the dog's sense gratification. Finally, sense gratification is sense gratification. The pleasure that you feel in the big restaurant is not different from the pleasure that the dog feels chewing on a bone in the gutter. It's the same thing. Because one is polished, one is sane. Oh, the dog at least is living like a dog. That's good, a dog should live like a dog. But you're a human being and you're living like a dog. Mogam Partha Sajiva. You've got this advanced human form of life and you're using that for the business of the dog. Is it very good? And you're thinking advanced. And these Hare Krishna people, they're wasting their lives. They think that we're sleeping, we think they're sleeping. Because they're awake only for the same business of the animals. And they're asleep to spiritual realization. They're asleep. And you say, come on, please, chant Hare Krishna and read Bhagavad Gita and come to our program. No time, no time, no time. Why no time? Because I'm a very busy dog. So they don't know that human life is meant for this. And even apart from that, Krishna is saying that if you engage in my service, I'll provide also everything that you need.
I'll provide everything.
Yoga Kshema Bahamya. Whatever you need, I'll supply. Just like a government servant. He doesn't separately have to think, how will I eat? Or soldier, how will I eat? Where will I get my food? Where will I stay? Because you're serving the government. The government is providing food. The government is providing a place to stay. The government is providing protection, everything. Because you're serving the government. So if by serving the government, you'll get so much. They'll fix your teeth. They'll do this. They'll do that. Then why not by serving Krishna? Krishna says, I'll maintain you. Even, and that's a practical. He's maintaining all the other living beings, even if they're not serving him. The ant is getting his food, the elephant is getting his food. Why do we have to spend our whole life? Where is food? We just have to serve Krishna. Everything will also automatically be provided by Krishna. Even if we have some extraordinary desire. Dhruva Maharaj was desiring a planet better than that of his father and grandfather. That means better than Brahmaloka. And Krishna provided. Yes, you have some material desire, you're not a pure devotee. But somehow you're going through so much trouble to serve me. Alright, take your plans. And go back to Godhead also. Krishna is so kind. This is the difference. If I worship some demigod, I may get the thing. But that's all I get. I get that material thing that I wanted, but that's all I get. That means temporary time. But if I serve Krishna, then my material temporary needs will be taken care of, and I'll get the supreme, Vaiti Chajyam, Param Sthanam, Adyeti. I surpass all the other things and go back to Krishna. Therefore, utana ti, if one is intelligent, ti brain, then with great concentration, with great force, with great intensity, one should engage in the service of Krishna. Yajeta pudusham kura. Kardama Muni did that. He was worshipping Krishna with great seriousness. And he wanted, somehow he was desiring, let me have a suitable wife. So he got the most qualified wife, the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, most aristocratic, beautiful, devoted, qualified wife. And he got the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Kapildev as his son. That means he got the greatest benediction that Krishna himself awarded himself. We're after some material reward. Let me get money, let me get a wife, let me get house, let me get this, that. But for the devotee, Krishna gives himself. Vasudeva Sarvamiti, Krishna is everything. Or if you're Sarvakama, if you want everything, then serve Krishna and get Krishna, because Krishna is everything. You can't get everything. You want something, as soon as you get it, then you want the next thing. You get $10,000, you're thinking, this would be so wonderful if I could only get $10,000. Then you get $10,000, you think, it's not enough. Somehow I was thinking, no, it's not enough, I need $100,000. Then $100,000, no, my expenses are... It goes on and on. Whatever I get, I'll not be satisfied. No, I want more. But Vasudeva Krishna is everything. If you get Krishna, there's nothing more to be had. There's nothing else to be desired. There's nothing else that exists. And Kardama Muni got that Krishna as his son. So where is the comparison between the result that he got and the result that we get by worshipping such and such demigod, such and such? Therefore, udarati, if one is more intelligent, then one should, under all circumstances, engage in devotional service. and material life and so many things, they're all very difficult. And to get Krishna's, the process is very easy. Especially in the Kali Yuga, by chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Chant, dance, take prasadam. Therefore, Uttarati, in Kali Yuga, nobody is very intelligent. Everyone is more or less foolish. Sumedhasa. Those who are little intelligent in Kali Yuga, as far as it's possible to be intelligent, they'll engage in the Sankirtan. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Thank you very much. Some questions. What are the symptoms of love and lust? As described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Atmendriya Priti Vancha Paribali Kaam. Krishnendriya Priti Vancha Tare Premanam. That someone wants to satisfy his own senses. Atmendriya Priti Vancha. That's called lust. And Krishnendriya Priti Vancha. Someone's trying to serve, desiring to serve Krishna's senses, that's called love. Last night we were reading about Hanuman. He was desiring to serve Lord Ramchandra. And Ravana, he was desiring to enjoy Sita Devi. Lust. Atmendriya Priti Vancha. Let Sita be for my enjoyment. Let me enjoy it. That's called lust. And Hanuman, no question of lust. Let Sita be together with Lord Ramchandra. That's called love. Yeah. How do we be steadfast in devotional service during frustrations or ill health? By realizing that there's no alternative. That if I'm frustrated, what will I do? Either I'll engage in devotional service or I'll continue to be frustrated. So why not engage in devotional service? Nothing else will make me free from frustration. I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do this, that. I'll be material. Rather, if I'm frustrated, yes, I must be frustrated because I'm in this material world. I'm in an unconstitutional position, therefore I'm frustrated. Even in devotional service, there are so many impediments, there are so many difficulties, there are so many obstacles. Why? Because I'm in this material body. Because I'm in this material world. Therefore, sometimes even in devotional service, we're frustrated. But what if I give up devotional service, I'll be more frustrated. Rather, I'll be surrendering to the cause of my frustration. Just like the drunkards, they're miserable because of their habit of drinking. And their antidote is to drink more. They become more frustrated. The drunkards, the gamblers. It's not that they become free from frustration by their drinking, by gambling, by drugs. They become more frustrated. And we're trying to serve Krishna, and on account of our past material activities, we have this body and we're meeting with frustration. But the answer is to get to perform more devotional service and leave aside the cause of our frustration. All right, I'm frustrated. Let me serve Krishna. We can remember, just like the Pandavas, Draupadi, they were in frustration. The kingdom was taken, was lost. They were exiled, so many things. But they didn't think, all right, now what's the being devotees of Krishna, now we've lost our kingdom. Let us be bitter. Go around the world. No. Let us stick to devotional service to Krishna. And at the end, we got everything. Or ill health. Ill health means difficulty. It's very unhappy business. But why am I in ill health? On account of my past. Neglect. Because I've neglected Krishna. I've come to this material world. I've got this material body. And material body means there must be something. But Prabhupada said, disease is temporary, health is eternal. If we come to the spiritual platform, we'll have eternal joy. Because we won't have a material body. Or we'll forget this material body. The more I come to the platform of material consciousness, the ill health must be there. Because I have this body, there must be sometimes ill health. But if I, when I come to the platform of bodily consciousness, therefore I suffer. The body is not doing very well, and I'm thinking only about this body, that means I'm in misery. The body is in difficulty, I'm only thinking about that, so now my whole consciousness is misery consciousness. But even amidst the greatest difficulty, one who's in Krishna consciousness is in ecstasy. Prabhupada, in his last days, there was hardly any strength in the body. His doctor said any ordinary man would be screaming. He was not taking any painkillers, he was not taking anything. The doctor said any ordinary person would be screaming in pain. And Prabhupada was in transcendental ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. Because his consciousness was not focused on this body. His consciousness was focused on Krishna. In loss or gain, happiness or distress. Just like I lose something. If I lose something, so the thing is lost. What can be done? But if I spend my time, oh, I've lost it, then I'll be miserable. And if I'm detached, all right, I've lost it. Hare Krishna. Then, no problem. So if I have some difficulty with this body, well, all right, I'm not this body. And by Krishna's grace, I have that knowledge that I'm not this body, I'm servant of Krishna. So let me not absorb my mind in the source of my suffering, let me absorb my mind in Krishna. So for the devotee, ill health becomes an impetus for devotional service. Any other questions? Yes? It's not working, just laugh.
It said that there was given up service of Krishna. For them there's no frustration.
For both, yeah.
For us in the neophyte stage, we might have not given up everything for service of Krishna.
We've not given everything up for the service of Krishna.
Yeah.
That's why we're neophytes, yes.
So, the degree of frustration, it manifests in a different,
In proportion. The less I surrender to Krishna, the more I'll be frustrated. The more I surrender to Krishna, the less I'll be frustrated. And one who fully surrenders to Krishna, he'll never be frustrated.
Theoretically, we understand that in the verse, but then we think that or we feel the frustration is more even though we engage in the service.
You feel it more than what? You feel frustration more even though engaged in devotional service. You feel it more than what?
Sometimes we feel that it would have been better if I stayed in the material life.
That's Maya's trick. You're feeling frustrated in devotional service. You were so happy when you were serving me. That's called Maya. Maya means it's a lie. You're feeling a little frustration. When you were serving me, there was no frustration. It was so nice. Why don't you come back and serve me? And then you go back and serve her, and there's 100 times the frustration. So that's Maya. Maya is giving us lies. Why don't you give up this nonsense Krishna consciousness and chant Maya Maya and be happy. And then her business is, I'll kick you like a dog. We're only on account of having been in Maya's captivity for so long, we're frustrated and suffering something. But our frustration has been brought to the minimum by the mercy of Krishna. And if we think, no, let me go back, then maximum suffering. And not only this life. Suppose in this life I'm getting some frustration. But if I'm engaged in devotional service, I'm putting an end to this process of living in this material world. And if I give up Krishna consciousness, then I'm arranging to live permanently in this material world and suffer lifetime after lifetime. When Maya posts her advertisements, she doesn't tell you that. Just like any good advertisement, you know, save 50%. They don't say, spend money. It's not that after entering the store and saving 50%, now you have more money in your pocket than before you went into the store. You have less money. But you're thinking, I saved 50%. I spent $50, I saved 50%, but I'm out $50. Well, that's a small thing, alright, $50. But the small print in Maya is, you know, get the girl of your dreams, make money, get this, get that, and have it all taken away, either in this life or at the time of death. And when you get it, it's not what you think it was also. If I have money, I'll be happy. Then you have money and you find out that no one can be trusted as your friend anymore because you don't know whether he's after your friendship or your money. And you got the nice house, but now you have to repair it, you have to pay taxes on it, you have to have the security guards, you have to be fire insurance, this, that. And finally you have to get kicked out. Maya's not advertising that. Maya says, I'm so nice, come on. He doesn't say, come on, I'll kick you also. That she doesn't say. Come on, you're frustrated, you're unhappy. I'm so nice, I'll treat you well.
The devotees surrendered, but then there is no question of frustration. Is there in the translation? Is it because of the knowledge or is it because of the Krishna's mercy?
It's actually because of Krishna's mercy. Those who have knowledge are also frustrated. Simply having knowledge doesn't solve the problem. Aruyukrishtraina param padam tata patantirvanatatayushvara. The Gyanis, they have knowledge, but they still have some material desire, even if their material desire is, let me become one with Nirakar Brahma. Finally, they become frustrated. All right, now I'm one with Brahma, but it's boring. There's no life here. They fall down again. Mama Vaitita Kantiya Kundalini. The one who engages in the devotional service of Krishna never falls again. Even if he falls, finally he attains the lotus feet of Krishna, and he never comes back. Yes, Jack, why don't you put your question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I have two questions. One is, what is consciousness? How do we understand consciousness? Is it thinking or our plans for doing something? Or what is consciousness?
These are symptoms of consciousness. Thinking, feeling, and knowing. Just like these kartals. They're not thinking anything. And if I bang them, they won't feel it. And they're not desiring, let me join the kirtan. Let me be played by this person, not by that person. They have no thinking, they have no feeling. These are the symptoms of inert matter.
There's no thought, there's no feeling, there's no desire.
And consciousness, the symptoms are these things. There's thinking, there's feeling, there's desire. So if we reflect upon ourselves, materialists are busy thinking of things. I want this, I want that. They're thinking about material things. But the introspective person is thinking about himself. What am I? What am I? Who am I? And if I think about myself, I'll think that I'm the person who's thinking. That much I know, that I don't know exactly what I am, but I'm thinking about myself, so I'm something that thinks. I'm something that has feelings. I'm something that has desires. But if I think about matter, it doesn't have these things. Then if I think about my body, it's matter only. It's made of different material elements, the scientists say, so much magnesium, carbon, hydrogen, phosphorus, this. These are material things. If I lose my hand, if it's cut off and it's lying on the table, then it's just a material thing. It has no consciousness. So my actual identity is that consciousness. What is that consciousness? The source of the thinking, feeling. In that way, by self-reflection, one understands my consciousness. One also understands I'm not the supreme consciousness. I'm controlling this one body, but there's so many bodies, so many conscious living beings. What's behind everything? Then that's the supreme consciousness. So by introspection, I'm consciousness, and I'm part of my higher consciousness. That's Krishna.
So if we are careful with the thinking, feeling, and belief, then we can change our material consciousness to spiritual consciousness. Three we have to follow.
Tell me again, starting again.
I want to know whether these three things we have to follow, the thinking, feeling, and belief.
You'll do these things no matter what. You can't stop thinking. The Buddhists, they try to stop thinking. So they're thinking about stopping their thinking. You can't stop thinking. Even people, they're thinking, they wish they could stop thinking, because their thinking is giving them anxiety. Like, they can't stop. No one can stop thinking. No one can become free from feelings. We're not stones. And no one becomes, stops desiring. Just trying to kill desire doesn't work. So we'll think, we'll feel, we'll desire no matter what. But what will we think? What will we feel? What will we desire? That we can change. Now I'm thinking, let me enjoy it. Now I'm thinking, I'm feeling, oh, there's material things. Desiring material things. If I think about Krishna, feel Krishna consciousness, desire, let me serve Krishna. Not stopping desire or thinking or feeling, it's directing everything to Krishna.
In Bhagavad Gita introduction, Prabhupada writes, time is eternal. Out of the five, how time is eternal? In the spiritual world also there is time?
No. In the spiritual world, there's no time, or there's eternal present. In this material world, time has three features: past, present, and future. What's present is no longer in the past, is not yet in the past, and it's no longer in the future. What's in the future hasn't yet happened, and there's no question of that. The three phases. In the spiritual world, it's all present. There's no future, there's no past, it's all present. What is that? How is that? We can't imagine. Because for us, there's always past, there's future. In the spiritual world, everything is present, always.
How is time eternal?
It has no beginning. It has no end. As long as this material world is in existence, time is existing. Everything else comes and goes within time. This flower, it didn't exist, now it's existing. And after some time, it will wilt and no longer exist. That happens within time. Everything comes and goes by the power of time. Time finally says, all right, time to go. We you've been in this body 50 years or 80 years, now get out. Time dictates. But no one dictates the time. Now you get out. Now your time is up. No, time is always. From that point of view, time is identical with Krishna.
Time is not created.
No, time is one of the energies of Krishna. Rather, time activates the creation. In third canto later, we'll find that there was earth, there was fire, there was water, there were all the material ingredients, but they weren't doing anything. They were just like in a storehouse. Nothing happened. Then Krishna glanced over the creation, and everything started cooking. Why? In that glance, there's time. The added element is time. When you add time to all these material elements, then everything starts developing. Just like you have water. You have a pot holding the water, and you have a flame underneath the pot. What happens? It gets cooked. But only if you add time. Without time, the water won't boil. The pot is there, the water is there, the flame is there. But unless time is there, the water doesn't boil. The time is the essential ingredient for making everything happen. The whole material creation takes place because of time. The time is considered the unmanifest feature of Krishna. So for those who say, oh, I don't believe in God, this is all nonsense, your faith in God, I don't accept any superior authority, there's only man and what he makes of himself. Ah, but there's time. Time is not superior. You don't accept any supreme controller, but there is a supreme controller. Time is supreme. You can't stop time. You can't say no to time. Or you have to accept some superior authority. But for you, kalosmi, that time means death. And for the devotee, time means joining Krishna. Krishna is time, but you can look at him either as death or as Govinda, either way.
Hare Krishna, Mother, please accept my humble obeisances. Can you please explain to us the difference between offensive chanting, inoffensive chanting, and devotional chanting?
Offensive chanting may also be devotional, but it's not refined. Just like unrefined gold, it's also gold, but it's not refined. If you want to get the nice gold ornaments, then you have to have refined gold. Or one may also be chanting with devotion, but with offenses. In the beginning, we chant, there may be some devotion, but there's offenses also. Those are 10 offenses. To commit sinful activities, while engaged in chanting, to neglect the orders of the spiritual master, to blaspheme the devotees, to think that chanting is one of the pious activities, to think that other demigod beings are the same level as God's name, to be inattentive, there are 10 offenses. From the beginning stage, we may chant with some devotion, but it's clouded by these offenses. But if we go on chanting, offensive or inoffensive, we're chanting sincerely, then the offenses will diminish. We're chanting sincerely, we're trying, let me get free from these offenses. And then the offenses will diminish. And one comes, especially in the association of the devotees. And that's called the clearing stage. Offenses are diminishing. And when the offenses are completely cleared away, that's called pure chanting. But it's hard, you know, just to think of some. I need some context, you know, just to say all of some past time.
could even be a realization of Srila Prabhupada.
I told you yesterday, in the context of the philosophy, everything, then naturally you think of Prabhupada in some. But just if you ask me, you know, tell something about Prabhupada, I don't like it. Let's see. Prabhupada also said, he told one devotee, I think Trivikram Maharaj, I mentioned him last night, he asked Prabhupada, could you say something about your Guru Maharaj? Prabhupada said, what is there to say? He was a Vaikuntha man.
This aspect of ego is like hard is a thunderbolt but soft is a rose. So sometimes, I mean, when you read Srila Prabhupada's books, certain things, I mean, he mixes no words, I mean, he calls a rascal, or, you know, but then the way he says it is.
Oh, I'll tell you, okay, I thought of a story. This is a rascal story. That one time one gentleman came to New York City, elderly gentleman, American gentleman, and he came to the temple. This was on 2nd Avenue, 61 2nd Avenue, or 2nd Temple. And he had a letter from Srila Prabhupada, that when I come to New York, thank you for your letter, and when I come to New York, then you can come see me. So he came to the temple. Prabhupada happened to be in New York at that time. And there was this man with his letter. So Brahmananda Prabhu, who was the temple president, said, all right, then, you know, the letter is there. Prabhupada said, you can come see him. So he had me take this man to see Prabhupada. Prabhupada was living, his apartment was behind 26 Second Avenue. So that was just down the street. So we went to see Prabhupada. This gentleman was a member of a yoga society. Before Prabhupada came into America, some other yogis had come to America, and there were some people who were, you know, interested in yoga. Very few. And it was, you know, more theoretical, more, you know, the gyanis, they're just some philosophy, but not actually any practical thing. But there was some interest. There were some books published, there were some people, they knew there was yoga, they had some interest. Speculation. So this man was like that. And then mostly, you know, like older people, or, you know, not only older people, but anyway, this gentleman happened to be an older gentleman. He was a member of some yoga society or Vedanta society. So I brought him to see Srila Prabhupada, and he said to Srila Prabhupada, that, Swamiji, I like your society very much, but one thing I don't understand is that one of your students told me that you said that Swami such and such is a rascal. And I don't understand why you would say that, because it seems to me that Swami such and such is a very holy person. And he mentioned some big Swami. So Prabhupada said, who has said this? Who has said that I have called him rascal? And the man said, you did not say. Prabhupada said, if they say that I have said that he is rascal, and I have not said, then they are rascal. So then the man became quite, he was pleased. So, created a nice moment. Then Prabhupada took a book off his bookshelf. And he handed it to the man. He said, you know this book? And the man saw the book, Bhagavad Gita, by Dr. Such and Such. He said, oh, Dr. Such and Such, Vedanta Society, that, whatever. Oh, yes. And the man became very happy, more happy. And now, not only is Such and Such not a rascal, but Such and Such is other Such and Such number two, his book is there in Prabhupada's bookshelf. So Prabhupada opened it up. He said, read. He pointed to one verse, read. So the verse was there, Manmana Bhagavat Bhaktam Madhyaji Manamaskar. So the man was reading that always think of me, become my devotee, offer your homage to me, do everything for me.
worship means.
Prabhupada said yes, he is a very good scholar. He has translated very nicely. Now, the commentary, what does he say? The man began reading, "It is not to Krishna that we have to surrender, but to the unborn, unmanifested something, something within Krishna." Prabhupada said, "Just see. Therefore I say they are all rascals." Like Krishna is saying me, and this rascal is saying not to Krishna. Manmana Baba Madhvatra Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru Mam Nibaishati. Krishna, five times he's saying me, and the commentator is saying not Krishna. Krishna himself says, Namam Duskrita Namuta Prabhupada Naranima Maya Pritagana Asura Pavaha. Anyone who doesn't surrender to me is Duskriti, Naradhama, lowest of the mankind. Maya Pritagana, his knowledge has been stolen by illusion. Mudha, he's an ass. Asura Bhava, he's a demon. Duskriti, Niskriti. Prabhupada explained all of these different words. Then Prabhupada said, "It is not my saying, it's Krishna's saying. What can I do? What can I do?" And Prabhupada said also, he said, sometimes strong words are needed to awaken a sleeping man. Not that way, Prabhupada. Another time, I was at some program. And this was in Delhi. And it was just beginning of summer. So there was a big pandal, and Prabhupada was sitting on the stage, and some of us, his students, were sitting on the stage also. And the chief guest was some, you know, distinguished man. I forget whether he was a judge or some political leader or some scientist, but some distinguished person was there as the very distinguished man was the chief guest. So you know the system, the chief guest speaks, then Prabhupada speaks. So the man was speaking, but on the stage there was a big fan. You know, those industrial strength fans. So there's this big fan, and of course this was not a Japanese fan, this was an Indian fan. So it's clattering like anything. So the man is speaking, but the fan is very loud. So Prabhupada just looked over, and I was sitting next to the fan. And so he looked over in my direction, I understood, so I turned off the fan. Now we can hear the man, and he's speaking. And it's the usual, you know, hodgepodge, mayavadi, everything is same as everything else, and whichever God you would, something impersonal, speculative. Prabhupada just looked in my direction. No, I wasn't in Kharagpur. In the last Delhi Pandal, Prabhupada was there, and one, it's a long, I could elaborate, but one man asked the question that, "Sir, can you prove by logic that there is God?" Big crowd. "Sir, can you prove?" And you know, what suit and tie, kind of sophisticated Indian gentleman. "Can you prove by logic that there is God?" Prabhupada said, "You do not know what is logic." And again the man put his question, "Sir, by logic, can you prove?" Prabhupada, "You do not know what is logic." And again the man said, "Sir, can you logically demonstrate, can you prove that there is existence of God. Prabhupada said again, you do not know what is loving. Prabhupada said there are children, living entities, and there's a mother, Mother Nature. Therefore, there must be a father. That's logic, not faith. Have you seen God? Lots of times people would say, okay, have you seen God? And Prabhupada had some sort of typical responses. First one, someone says, have you seen God? So Prabhupada said, if I tell you, will you accept? Because it's simply a challenge. Have you seen God? If I say yes, you'll say I don't believe you. Why should I say anything? And if I say no, then you're happy. So Prabhupada would say, if I tell you, will you believe me? One time, I wasn't there, but I heard that someone got up and said, sir, can you see God? And Prabhupada said, no, you're standing in the way.
But devotee is the admitted that he is seeing God at every moment. So devotees and believers.
Prabhupada emphasized that our process is not seeing, our process is hearing. Everyone says, have you seen God? Can you see God? Why seeing? Why is this seeing the most important thing? Hearing is more important than seeing. You can't see the wind. But when you hear the wind blowing, you know the wind is there. You can't see your intelligence. Can you see your intelligence? Does it mean you have no intelligence? We have to hear. Hearing is more important, or hearing is not different from seeing. If we can hear Hare Krishna properly, if we hear the message of Krishna properly, then by realization we'll see that there's no difference between hearing and seeing. So first we'll realize the presence of Krishna and sound, and by realizing the presence of Krishna and sound, our vision will be purified and we'll be able to see Krishna also. Preman janam churita bhakti lochan. But the process is not just seeing. You know, we have the deity, but if you simply do some eye exercise and try to see, you will not see it. Tad Sri Krishna Namadi Tapave Prayamandri Seva Mukhini Vivani Svaya Devas Prajurna. It's not eye exercise that if I just screw my eyes in a certain way, I'll see Krishna. But by service. Prabhupada used to say, don't try to see Krishna, but try to act in such a way that Krishna will see you. Darshan, become your darshan. Actually, darshan means that we come to offer our respects so that Krishna will see us. Oh, by service, sevan mukhi jivanam, and the service begins with the jivanam. Chanting Hare Krishna, taking prasad. But we're chanting, we're not seeing. But Prabhupada's chant, that's the difference between offensive chanting and pure chanting. Offensive chanting, we'll think all this chanting, how many rounds are left, how many beads are left in this round. But in pure chanting, one will see Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I just wanted to know that it is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. When Krishna glances over the material nature and impregnates and all the material and manifestation is created, how it is?
How? Viryam, by potency. By Krishna's potency. How is described in the third canto? Step by step by step by step. How Krishna enters as time how time starts activating the material elements, how the material elements expand, starting from false ego, then it expands to the mind, to the intelligence, and you get the senses, the sense objects, they all evolve one after another, starting from pradhan and prakriti. From the pradhan, from the unmanifest material nature, the glance of Krishna is added as time. Actually, glance means time. Because time starts everything from him. When Krishna glances with his time energy, then these material elements start to separately manifest one after another, and the creation is elaborated. As you'll find in the description by Lord Kapildev in the third chapter. Now we're just beginning. The stage is being set for Lord Kapildev's appearance. And after he appears, he'll instruct his mother, Devadutti, and he'll explain all these things. A very important instruction to go through.
Personification of Prakriti is Durga. So he glances at Durga. And how does he.
His glance takes the form of Shambhu. So then Lord Shiva is associated with Durga in their combination. Lord Krishna never comes directly in touch with material nature. But Lord Shiva is directly, he's married to Durga.
He wants to know what happened to Subhadra after the birth. I mean, when she escaped from Kamsa's hands. We hear that she goes up and she tells Kamsa that the person who's going to kill you is born elsewhere. And then she manifests herself. She expands as different forms, Bhadrakali and Yamaya. But she is Subhadra, isn't it? Krishna's sister. So we don't hear about where she grew up or what happened to her until later when she married Arjuna.
I didn't hear either. Later we find out more. She marries Arjuna. Yeah, I don't. The unknown part of Subhadra's life.
She wants to know how will we stand an eternal relationship with Krishna? Which rasa we have?
In the advanced stage, you'll automatically know. You can't, in the neophyte stage, there's no point in trying to figure it out. Because we're in the neophyte stage, our relationship is with matter. And our relationship with Krishna is hardly manifest. We don't even understand that we're Krishna's servant. And servants is the basis of all relationships. But we're still thinking we're enjoyers. So we have to come to the purer stage. In the pure stage, the particular attraction for serving Krishna in a particular mood will automatically be met. It's like eating. Nobody will have to say, now you've eaten. You'll know. Oh, in the mature stage, these things will automatically appear. And trying to, push them forward in the beginning stage will not be effective. It will come in due time. It's like being a grown-up, A child doesn't understand what it is to be a grown-up. As much as he tries to figure it out, the little child will not understand. But when he's grown up, then he'll understand.
Lost power. Anyway, any other questions?
Shall we stop here? Keep going? Or keep going? Mine's not working either, so maybe yours is not working tonight.
Hare Krishna. Aaj program super thi.
Shanti Rakhi, Shanti Rakhi. Mike is not working.
Gala
mein program hoga. Fir sham ko Gala mein Roadmap diya gaya hai. Patni Chal company jahan Janmashtami ka program hua tha,
wahi pe hoga 6 baje se. 6 baje se 9 baje tak. Gala mein hoga program.
Thank you all very much.